They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I don't know what you come to do, but I come to breathe.
Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
What it do, good people? Welcome to Who Shot Ya? It's your boy. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. With me in the studio, I have film reviews editor at The Wrap, the one and only Alonzo Duralde.
Hey, Ricky.
Hey, Alonzo. What is good with you, sir?
What is good with me is a new cookbook by Ruth Reichel called My Kitchen Year, which I gave to my husband for Christmas, and it's a win-win for me because he actually makes stuff that's in it. So, you know, I gave the present, but really I'm getting it all. In the last week, he made, like, the greatest bolognese sauce I ever ate in my whole life, and this applesauce cake with a caramel glaze.
Ooh.
So if this is kind of thing is your jam,
yeah,
Ruth Reichel's My Kitchen Year, she will blow you away.
Okay. You know what is my jam is, like, if you guys ever have leftovers and you want to bring any of that in, hook us up.
Do I look like somebody who leaves behind leftovers?
No, but shout out to that Shining shirt that you're wearing, though, sir.
Thank you.
Alonzo's wearing a dope-ass Shining shirt, y'all. And to my left, film critic and host of Switchblade Sisters podcast, it's the one and only Sometimes It Snows in April Wolf, yo.
Hi, Ricky.
April is jamming out in her chair. What's good with you?
I feel like people really enjoyed my baby foot recommendation thing.
Dave bought some. He hadn't done it yet, but he is very excited about
it. I know.
Baby
I'm
footing.
So excited for Alonzo's husband to to report back on his beautiful feet. So I'm going to throw it out here that I have been washing my face with something new, and I love it.
Oh, okay.
It is Burt's Bees cleansing oil. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought that you can cleanse your face with oil? What? So that's what I've been doing, and I love it, and it's really great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's treating you right.
It's, yeah, it's so soft. Everything is so soft. I'm just slippery, slipping through life. It's wonderful.
You had a glow today.
Yes.
I just wonder what that was about. Now, you know.
Oh, yeah. The glow is just, it's hot.
It is unseasonably warm for February.
Yeah,
yes,
that's
no question.
That's basically it.
What's good, Ricky?
Yeah, damn it. He beat me again. Did you hear me?
I heard it. I knew it was on the way. When this episode drops on Friday, it will be exactly 1 month that I have not had any alcohol.
And
I feel good. It sucked for like the first week, you know? It was just kind of like rough because I was like doing like the extreme of like, I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to hang out with my friends. Because when you do comedy, you're always in bars and you're just like, oh, I'm going to have a drink. Mm-hmm. And I was on hiatus and I was just doubling down on it, you know? And then January came along and I was like, you know what? I want to start off the new year new and fresh and not have any alcohol. And I'm almost at the finish line, and it feels so goddamn good. I know I'm a little annoying sometimes when I tell my friends.
So hiatus Ricky is now dryatus Ricky.
Boom, son. Boom. Thank you all for listening.
Ricky.
Thank you all for listening. We out.
We're
you don't
done.
Need to hear no more.
We're done. I'm very proud of you.
Oh, thank you.
Well done, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate y'all saying that. And I appreciate what you all did this week with having to go and watch the 3-hour movie that we will be talking about today.
It's so random. I think I maybe watched it at the same time that you did, if you tweeted out or something.
Oh, yeah. Was it at the same time?
Like,
yeah,
I was early in the morning.
It was early in the morning.
Yeah, early in the morning. And I sat down and I was just like, I was checking my Twitter right before I pushed play and I was like, Ricky's watching it right now too. It's just sending you like psychic hate. Psychic hate mail. Like,
also, shout out to my DJ Psychic Hate. But what it means, April, like this movie, we're all connected, yo. It all fits in together in one piece.
In 3 hours.
In 3 hours. It's a
you
big
better make it fit in 3 hours.
So we will be talking about Cloud Atlas. We will also be talking about movies that we love that everyone else hates. We will be giving you our staff picks at the end of the show. But like we always do, we are going to start off a show with the news segment, It a Dick. And how it works is I will read a news segment or blurb, and Alonzo or April will jump in by answering these two simple questions. Is this important? Do I care? So let's get started. All right, do we all care about this? I don't know if you all heard. There's a new soldier in the war on Star Wars, and it is Dame Helen Mirren. After seeing The Force Awakens, the Queen star told the LA Times, I thought they made a terrible mistake because they took the stormtrooper's hat off. There was this lovely young actor, which means one of the stormtroopers is a human being, and if he's a human, they're all human. And you have been indiscriminately killing stormtroopers for the last 6 Star Wars movies without any consideration to their humanity.
Duh. Helen Mirren, that's the whole fucking point.
Welcome to 1977, Helen Mirren.
Like, yes, we know. Like, that's the whole, like, reveal of, like, hey.
Guess what?
Oh,
that was Jen Yamato's interview, wasn't it? Or maybe it wasn't.
Oh, was it?
I think it was. I think Jen Yamato did that, for the LA Times.
Yeah. Remind me,
our friend Jen.
They have friend of the
show.
Friend of the show. Remind me next time Jen is here to just like touch her arm, so I can be like, oh, I've had contact
with
Helen Mirren now.
Helen Mirren.
Oh, well, a little hometown story here. Chicago Sun-Times film critic Richard Roper might not be as popular as we thought. According to a New York Times investigation, Roper, along with other prominent figures, purchased Twitter followers to inflate his social media presence. He's trying to blow up his own spot. Now that Roper's been called out, his paper will no longer publish his work until they investigate the issue. Is that important? Do you all care?
Alonzo, I mean, what are your thoughts on popularity as a critic, what that means to your work?
Ooh, like, what? I like this question.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's one thing if you are an up and comer trying to, you know, if you're somebody who's been doing like a blog or a podcast and you are going to some sort of next level thing and you want to say, hey, look at all these Twitter followers I have, or look at all these downloads I have, that's one thing. But if you're already Richard Roper and you already write for the Chicago Sun-Times, I don't know what that's for. Like, who are you trying to impress if you already got the gig, you know? I don't know. For me, this has the I want to give this the Price is Right sad trombone.
Because like the new followers don't cost that much, so was he just like sitting at home with whiskey one night in Chicago, just like, well.
You know, you pay these places. I get added periodically on Instagram by these accounts that are nothing but like, we'll get you, you know, 1.5 million more followers. And someone's like, oh, great. All these Russian bots or whatever, you know, are now following me. Like, it's pointless and
puffery. When they're not tweeting things against Hillary or,
exactly,
or Bernie or for Trump.
Vote Dr. Jill Stein, you know. it's all very bizarre. But it's... I don't know. It's unseemly. I'm just going to leave it there.
It's a normal practice in the comedy world. Like, when Twitter, like, first was really coming up and blowing up, I mean, the comedian Joe Mandy made a very big deal about how he bought, I think, like 500,000 followers or maybe like close to 1 million followers on Twitter just to like prove like how dumb this all is, this popularity thing that we're trying to get online.
That's very dumb.
But that's different. But that's different, you know, as far as you were saying. With whatever Richard Roper's intentions may be. I mean, he already has that.
And you know, who knows? So many people at that level don't even run their own social media.
Right.
So for all we know, this is some assistant who got an itchy finger and thought, oh, this will be great. You know, I don't even know.
If you're charged with getting more followers and you're like, well, the easiest way to do it is like,
$200,
I'll
you
buy
got
them
it.
From my boss, you know?
All right, here's a hashtag Oscar so sad story, y'all. On Jimmy Kimmel this week, Get Out co-star Lil Rel Howery said he's not going to the Oscars, not because he doesn't want to, but because he's not invited. Let's take a listen to him on the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
You're an Academy Award, I guess you're not technically a nominee.
No,
will
I'm
you
not.
Go to the Academy Awards?
Well, I thought I was.
What happened?
You know, we called today looking for my ticket. They're like, oh, you're not in the first group.
Oh, so, what? What does that mean, you're not in the first group?
So the first tickets they give out is, I'm not on that list?
Oh, no. You, listen, I'll get you in. Don't worry. I'm the host.
I'm serious. I want to go.
Lil Rel, that's another Chicago story right there. Lil Rel is from Chicago, a Chicago comedian. Everybody loves him. Loved by the city. As soon as I hear his voice, I start laughing right away. We got to get him to the Oscars. Is this important? Do you all care?
How do you not invite Lil Rel to the Oscars?
He's like...
He should present.
Yeah, absolutely. I would think for, like, the show trying to be...
They got Tiffany Haddish to announce the nominees with Andy Serkis, which in both cases is sort of like, yeah, we know you deserve a nomination this year, but you're probably not getting one.
Yeah,
you know, and so please, he is a when you ask people about Get Out. Eventually, they talk about how great Lil Rel is and what a key part of the film he is. So, he needs to be in there.
I didn't know he was also excluded from the SAG Awards Outstanding Cast nomination because it says here an actor's name must appear on an individual title card in the main title sequence in order to be eligible for the award.
Well, then Jordan Peele should have fucking done that.
I see you, Jordan. That's on you.
I mean, like, I feel like after that, he was probably like, oh, shit. Now I know this was my first feature film as the director. Maybe I had no fucking idea that I had to do that for him to be there. But I'm sure he will do it next time.
Yeah,
put everyone, front load everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, hey, where are my Bible fans at? Your prayers may have been answered because a Passion of the Christ sequel is on the way. Mel Gibson announced in 2016 that a sequel, The Resurrection, was in the works. And just this week, Jim Caviezel told USA Today he's reprising his role as Jesus of Nazareth. And according to him, this will be the biggest film in history. Will you be bringing them Jesus abs back? Go! Is this important? Do you all care?
More hot Jesus.
Yes.
No, I mean, like, that first one was pretty hard for me to weather as a person who was Catholic and around a lot of Catholic people growing up. It was like,
I've still never seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
It just like, I heard it was super gory and anti-Semitic, and I'm like, nope, no thanks, I'm good.
Yeah, it's the traditionalist Catholic version of that, whereas like a lot of Catholics are like, they don't see it as brutal. Like, it's almost like a glazed over kind of nicer thing. But traditionalists are like, no, we want to go back to, like, fire and brimstone God. And everything is terrible.
And Mel Gibson loves a hair shirt, you know. Like, he loves to make himself suffer in movies. He loves to make other people suffer in movies. One would argue he likes to make audiences suffer. does he not? Is there not a resurrection in The Passion of the Christ? Like, do they stop after... What's the last thing that happens in Passion of the Christ?
I saw it so long ago, I don't even remember.
Because usually...
I think it's just like they put him in the tomb. Maybe.
Yeah, I feel like it's just like
I can't remember.
Because usually you tell that story, like, you include the resurrection the first time around. So,
right?
You know,
yeah. I mean,
it seems a weird cliffhanger. You maybe
don't like spend all the time on beating up Jesus and you go to like the happy part where the Christians generally celebrate that because it is a resurrection.
Right.
You know? Like,
I mean, I could
ending.
Totally see Mel Gibson dwelling on the stabbing in the side part and then just ending it. But, you know, if you're going to make a whole movie out of rolling a rock out of the way, I mean, you know, knock yourself out. I don't know.
Oh, God, it's going to be really intense. That rock is really heavy.
And Thomas is going to doubt like a mofo.
I don't know, you guys. I just don't know.
I heard the rock might be in it. And if that is the case, you get
like off. Specifically,
they're going to roll Dwayne Johnson out of the cave.
He's like, you're going to have to move my whole cold dead body out of the way for Jesus to get out of here. You
I
know?
Can smell what's cooking in this tomb.
All right, we are going to take a break and we will be back. And when we do, we will be talking Cloud Atlas. We'll be right back, y'all.
There, I'm film critic April Wolf and host of the Maximum Fun podcast, Switchblade Sisters. Do you love genre films? Do you love female filmmakers? Do you love discussions on craft? If your answer is yes, you'll love Switchblade Sisters. Every episode, I invite one female filmmaker on, and we talk in depth about their fave genre film and how it influenced their own work. So we're talking horror, action, sci-fi, fantasy, bizarro, and exploitation cinema. Mothers, lock up your sons, because the Switchblade Sisters are coming for you. Available at MaximumFun.org or wherever you find your podcasts.
Welcome back to Who Shall You? I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. Joining me in the studio are...
April Wolf.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Now, today we're shaking things up a little bit. Instead of talking about a movie in theaters, we're talking about a film that I chose, 2012's Cloud Atlas. Now, to bring everyone up to speed, here's a clip that's very straightforward and explains the entire movie, so it all makes sense. Boom!
Our lives are not our own. From womb to tomb, we are bound to others. Past and present. And by each crime and every kindness, we birth our future.
April, can you give us a quick synopsis of this film, please?
Fuck you. I saw that.
Do it, I'll buy you a bucket of chicken.
Oh, my God. I saw that Casey, our producer, had written that I was doing the synopsis on this. And I was like, ah, shit. I was really hoping that Alonzo would get it. Okay. So it is about a group of people who, throughout time, incarnations of different humanhood, their paths intersect, and they have chances often to right wrongs and to help each other connect or to not. And they often keep making the wrong choices over and over. And then we get to a dystopian-ish future where apparently things are a little bit more peaceful, possibly. That maybe a right choice has been made. And yeah, that's it.
That was good. That's solid. I'm impressed.
It's as good as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm going to say why I like this movie. I'm going to speak on it. It's going to be a little long-winded, so bear with me. But I really do love this movie. It's a personal movie for me. It's up there with Malcolm X, where after I saw it, I was like, well, I'm just going to think about this for the rest of my life. And like in one form or another, it checks all the boxes, technically, of what I like in movies. Visual effects, cinematography, the score. It has, there's six storylines in it, and they're all different genres. And in those genres, there's genres that I like. I get to say the word genre. A word that gets used, I read a lot of reviews, and a word that kept getting used to talk about the movie was ambition. And the choices that the directors make are as ambitious as the movie itself, I think. As far as the casting, swapping genders, swapping races between the actors, combining genres, the theme. I don't love this movie in a way where I try and convince people, hey, what's your problem for not liking it? Or, hey, I love it so much, why don't you love it like I do? Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit what other people think about this movie. I like for people to watch this movie just so they can, I don't know, experience what it is that they're trying to do.
Movies that you see in the same way there are books that you read or songs or other works of art that give you the building blocks of your own sort of personal philosophy or your own way of looking at life. I mean, like for me, it's defending your life, strangely enough.
Is that right?
Albert Brooks movie, yeah. Because
that's what's up.
This whole notion of like, I don't believe in an afterlife, but the idea that we would be judged based on whether or not we were afraid of things. Because to me, that leeches out into so many other things. Like, were we afraid to be helpful or to be generous? Did we live in fear and subsequently were, bigoted or whatever. I mean, like, I just feel like fear kind of dictates so much of what we do right and what we do wrong. I don't go to the church of defending your life. It's just, it's a thing that happened. And so I get it. This is a movie that resonates with you and its themes mean something to you. And it's a movie you want to live up to in a way.
Most definitely. And another important thing is the other idea that this movie has is not that we all should have this belief, but that we're all one spirit or one soul, whatever you want to call it. We're all the same traveling through this story from the beginning of time to wherever this planet is that Tom Hanks and Halle Berry end up on at the end of the movie. I mean, that's... I'm all on board with that, man. Like, you tell me that, I'm in, you know?
I think it is a hopeful way to live a different paradigm to ingest, and I can appreciate that. I actually really appreciate people who are in movies who drive things home, like, constantly, you know, just like really hit it. Like, they hit
it's
you over the head.
It's always closing.
Yeah, exactly.
While never ending. Yeah.
So, I mean, I can appreciate that. And I did tear up a couple of times. You know, there's some, I think the Sixsmith and Frobisher story is very well told. It tells the story of these two men in the 1930s who are kind of secret lovers. And one is a composer who goes on to compose the Cloud Atlas movement of music, and then Sixsmith, who is apparently a kind of scientist or something, and they are separated and they can't be together because of the world that they live in. Obviously, it's the 1930s, and Frobisher gets, you know, caught up with this older composer who just wants to kind of steal his work, and it ends very sadly, and I really connected actually with that story.
Yeah.
I quite liked him.
I wish I liked this movie as much as you do, because I admire it greatly. I agree with you that it swings for the fences. Like, this is a movie of huge ambition and is, I mean, it's an art film in terms of the way that its narrative is kind of chopped up and interspersed and scattered throughout. I mean, it really makes you pay attention. You really have to be on top of what's going on. You know, and I think, yeah, on a technical level, it looks amazing. It's beautifully shot. The effects are great. The music is extraordinary. But when it gets to its emotional climaxes, I don't feel enough. And you know, you can tell when a movie thinks that you're really laughing or really crying or really moved or something, you know, and this movie is like giving it to you like, here it is. And I'm like, yeah, that's no, not enough.
Not,
you know?
Not enough, huh?
But you know, I love the Wachowskis. I think actually that a lot of what they're doing here they're doing it more effectively in Sense8, strangely enough.
I agree.
In terms of the whole idea of interconnectivity, of you know, people's sort of lives bleeding in and out of each other, that kind of thing. I think in a lot of ways Sense8 is a more successful manifestation of that idea. It is interesting. This is the first film after Lana's transition, and I think, you know, I'm not the person to connect these dots, but I'm sure there are trans film critics who have talked about this film being a trans movie in terms of the sort of malleability about exteriors. You know, you see, you have characters who play different races, who play different genders, and you know, it's that notion of it's what's inside that dictates what a person is and not what the outside shows the world.
Hmm. April, you've never seen it before. I know, Alonzo, you'd seen it.
Yeah, because
when
he
it was first released.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I forgot about until about three quarters of the way. He was like, oh, wait, I wrote about this.
April, you had never seen it before.
No.
I got the impression that you were not feeling watching this movie.
I mean, it's honestly the length.
Yeah.
It's really hard because if you're a working film critic, you do have to watch a lot of movies, a lot of things a week. I mean, Alonzo's watching two television shows right now, like all the way through simultaneously, which thankfully I'm not doing at the moment. But yeah, so 3 hours is kind of a time commitment. And so it needs to be really great to justify those 3 hours. I feel like the editing was really good in this movie, and I can step back and say that they did make a cohesive story, I felt. You know, it could have gone so wrong, like really off the rails wrong, instead of like, I might not like this or I might not connect with it. Mm-hmm. But it did not. Like, it stayed on the track the entire time, and that's a huge feat in itself. And isn't this, so this is like co-directed with someone else, though.
Tom Tykwer.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, and that's...
He did three segments. They did three segments, but they did all the prep together and all the post together.
Yeah.
And that's something that I maybe felt but couldn't put words to when I was watching it.
You felt that it was...
You could sense the shift of dudes behind the camera.
Yeah, because like within the stories, the things that connect together from time to space, from time to time, like the little clues, the hints, you know, they feel like they are director specific. For instance, you've got the Cloud Atlas story, the actual writing of this music, this piece of music called Cloud Atlas, that is by Frobisher. So that's the 1930s, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Halle Berry, who discovers this this recording in the 70s. Record store. Mm-hmm. And she's also develops a short relationship with Sixsmith, right?
Yeah.
So those two things feel very cohesive to me because it seems like they're connected in some way. That's the 1970s and the 1930s, right? So
yes.
That's all Jim, right? And then you've got the Wachowskis doing their thing, and they've got little connections that they develop. But it's harder to find those connections throughout. Mm. Mm. That's the thing that I had a hard time with. They were nice when they showed up.
I will say, I think the nursing home segment is my least favorite part. I think it's a little too wacky for the rest of the movie. Mm. And, you know, I am quoted on the DVD box of Jupiter Ascending. So, like, I have a soft spot for some Wachowski craziness. But even in that movie, like the scene where they're trying to do Brazil down to the Terry Gilliam cameo, like the interstellar bureaucracy.
Yeah.
The Wachowskis can do a lot of things, but comedy is not really their wheelhouse.
Did they do that one? They did the present day one? I thought that was the other dude.
Oh, you know, I'm not sure, actually.
Tom Tweiger did he did the 30s, the 1970s, and 2012. The Wachowskis
did the 19th century,
in the future.
Well, not your fault then, Wachowskis.
they're like, Alonzo, they're shooting off an email right now.
I know, they are pissed.
Sometimes I agree that the comedy is a little broad, and I do not like the comedy in Jupiter Ascending. That whole segment that you're talking about in Jupiter Ascending, I was like, what is happening right now? Get out of here. You know, put fucking roller...
Eddie Redmayne has some more outfits to wear. Yeah.
He's unintentionally funny.
Exactly.
Great.
Like in everything. What do you guys think about the makeup Jim Sturgess as in Asian Man?
The noses in this movie are kind of hilarious.
The noses are the weird thing.
And
it's always gonna be the weird
thing. They did it on purpose. That they put bad noses on famous people so that we would be sort of like jolted into the realization that they were being other people. And I think he's rationalizing. I think they just did bad noses.
I'm kind of on board with what Dave is saying there. I think it's intentionally stylized makeup. I don't think they're supposed to look the part. As we want them to or expect them to. I think they're trying to go for almost like a theatrical, like literal, like in the theater, theatrical kind of makeup where they put, if you're sitting in the last row, they put all of it on so you can distinguish what it is that's happening.
At the time the film came out, there were Asian activists who complained about the fact that they put Asian makeup on white actors because they would never do that. They would never turn a white actor black, basically, was the point of the protest.
Mm-hmm.
And I see their point, but there's so much going on in so many directions in this movie where Dunabai is white in the slave trader segment, and mm-hmm. Halle Berry is...
She's Jewish.
She's a white Jewish lady once. She's an Asian lady later on. I mean, there's a lot of back and forth. So I'm willing to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt that they were just sort of going for this whole notion of everybody is everything, and you know, our souls are connected to each other, even if our, you know, there's difference in ethnicity or background or whatever.
I agree. Yeah,
but I also understand why people got mad about it.
I remember when that was happening, and I was like, "Oh damn!" Before I saw the movie, I was like, "Oh damn! Why are the Wachowskis doing this?" But then I saw the movie, and it was obvious that yes, there is a reason why white actors have the Asian makeup on, and I mean it's
and vice versa.
It's all part of what they're trying to do with this movie, what they're trying to tell you.
It's I think there are better grievances elsewhere.
Yeah.
Just because the film itself is it's telling you like it's telling you why there are like white actors in yellow face.
Yeah.
And conversely Asian actors and a white face, which is obviously less offensive. But still.
I really want Duna Bay to be a goddamn star. I think she's great on Sense8.
She's so great on Sense8.
She's fantastic.
She's ferocious. I like her a lot.
Yeah. The Wachowskis. Overrated, underrated, exactly rated, or misunderstood?
I find them endlessly fascinating. Hmm. Like, even, like, I cannot in any way defend the Matrix sequels, but the trajectory from Bound to Matrix to this to, well, I know Speed Racer was
Speed
first.
Racer Speed was Racer, before Cloud Atlas.
Which I'm not a defender of, but I understand what people mean when they do defend it. Mm-hmm. To this, to Jupiter Ascending, I always want to see what they're up to.
Yeah.
Who the hell are these people? Like, what are, right? Their brains are, I mean, I think that we can't discount how greatly they changed action cinema.
Oh, no question.
Sure.
Their contributions to filmmaking are fucking tremendous. I mean, do you really, like, we would not probably have a John Wick if we didn't have The Matrix, you
absolutely.
Know?
Oh,
and, no,
like,
question.
And absolutely. And
wow.
Yeah. The Matrix
and all of American action cinema to me has been building up to fucking John Wick.
most definitely.
And I mean, and you can definitely connect the dots with their interest in, like, Hong Kong action cinema and anime and comic books. And, you know, again, like, no one ever invents anything, but they certainly fused a lot of different things into this vision of theirs that I think is fascinating. And yeah, it's super influential. And I think even movies like, you know, this and Jupiter Ascending that weren't hits, you know, from the jump are going to have a lingering impact and they're going to influence the way movies get made.
Yeah.
The Matrix, one of the few movies I went and saw again the next day and took somebody with me.
Wow.
Just because I knew, like, hey, man, you're going to see stuff in this movie that you've just never seen on film before. When fucking Trinity kicks old boy in the first 5 minutes, you've never seen the camera spin around like
it's
that
so,
was just amazing.
It's so hard to explain to young people. It's kind of like people who saw, like, Star Wars the first time. We were just like, no, seriously. Like, special effects of that were, like, fucking amazing.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Yeah, sure. But telling younger people now, just like, no, seriously. Yeah. The Matrix.
We didn't always have bullet time.
Yeah, when everyone does that shit now. You know?
Well, guys, I genuinely thank you for putting up with this movie, for watching it.
It wasn't putting up with. I think I expressed too much hatred. It's just the time commitment.
It was three hours, Ricky.
It is 3 hours. I'm a fan of the 3 hour jaunt when it's done well. Shout
out
to JFK.
I love a good 78 minute movie.
What would you say to other people? Would you tell them to stream it or skip it? It is currently on Netflix.
Oh, yeah, just fucking stream it. Yeah, do it. I mean, if you
no
got extra 3 hours and some Cafe Bustelo, go for it.
And, you know, look, if you happen to be one of those lucky people that lives in a city that has some repertory cinema, the day that anybody screens it, go see it. It is a beautiful piece of filmmaking.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I love it. One of my favorite movies of ever. It's on that list, yo. And I think you should definitely stream it. Check it out. It's on Netflix right now. Cloud Atlas, y'all. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to be talking about movies that we love that everyone else hates. We'll be right back, y'all. You're listening to Who Shot Ya.
Been a long time coming, but John Roderick finally has a podcast on the MaximumFun.org network.
The long wait is over. Max Fun friends, I teamed up with these two unlikely nerds and their dumb Star Trek podcast. And we talk about war movies, not just in a laudatory and salivating way. But we apply critical thinking principles to the multiple subtexts that are woven in every war movie.
And Sylvester Stallone specifically.
It is not that. It is not that at all.
So go grab Friendly Fire every Friday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh,
All right, welcome back, y'all. You're listening to Who Shot Ya. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. In studio, I have...
Alonzo Duraldi.
April Wolf.
We just talked about Clyde Atlas, which, as you know, one of my personal all-time favorites. At the same time, a lot of people hate that movie. And I know I'm not alone in loving a movie that everyone hates. So for this segment, we're going to discuss movies that we get the most shit for liking. The kind of movies where you walk out of the theater like, oh, that was a masterpiece. And then everybody tells you, nah, that was hot garbage. You know, movies that you love, that you just got them prominently displayed on your DVD case. And then people come over and they knock that shit over. Alonzo, April, what are movies that you all have like this?
Well, when the kids on the internet want to come at me
yes.
because I didn't like, you know, Warcraft or some bullshit, they always try and get me by referencing the fact that I gave a positive review to Movie 43.
Wow.
Because I laughed. I laughed. Halle Berry again.
Yep.
Halle Berry in makeup again.
Yeah.
I can't defend that movie. It made me laugh, and that was enough. They like to go remove that one. And I kind of had fun at Dragon Ball Evolution.
Which one was that one? Was that the kid from Lord of the Rings in it?
Yes.
Yes.
Which, look, I don't know Dragon Ball from a can of paint. So, you know, I'm sure if you're like a fan of the series, you're like, oh my God, how dare they, blah, 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 Dragon Ball. But I was like, this is kind of a dumb Hong Kong action movie for kids. Like, you know, yeah. Chow Yun-Fat's in it. What the hell?
April?
I was just telling...
This is a safe space, April.
Yeah, it's okay.
I was just
no
telling
judging.
These
no
guys that, like... I really like anything with Rick Moranis, and so Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, the sequel to Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
What about Big Daddy? Mm. No, not Big Daddy.
No, what's Little Giants?
Oh, Little Giants.
You're thinking about the football one, right?
Yeah, Little Giants. Yes.
Okay, we are talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still love any Rodney Dangerfield movie.
I
know. It's
Nathan
really
Raven
bad.
Just spent like January reviewing like the later terrible Rodney Dangerfield movie.
Oh God, I don't think which ones?
Like Meet Wally Sparks and
Rover Dangerfield.
Oh,
no,
Ladybugs.
No, those are
Ladybugs.
Ladybugs, I loved. I loved. Ooh. I loved Ladybugs.
Watch it again now. Apparently,
I don't want to.
Super inappropriate.
I truly don't want to.
A movie that I wept at the end of and I loved so much and is now like become fashionable to mock, especially because of Breaking Bad, Mr. Magorium's Wonder Emporium.
Oh.
I fucking love that movie. I love a good kids movie about death. What can I tell you?
You just reminded me of the incredible Mr. Olympus.
Limpet.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies from when I was a kid.
Where Don Knotts becomes an animated fish.
Oh, yeah.
And helps the war effort.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's great.
Again, I'm sure that there are people who are like under 30 who are like,
no idea what
they keep trying to remake that one.
That's right. Yeah, there was a while like Jim Carrey was attached to it for a minute, and it never happened. A movie that I love. That I went on a date to go see it, and I could feel the person next to me just hating it as it was going on. Within the first 5 minutes, I could tell. I was like, you have checked out of this. Is Magnolia. I love Magnolia.
I too. You're in
I like Magnolia. I run hot and cold with certain parts of it, but no, there's great.
It's like Cloud Atlas in that it hits you over the head pretty consistently, and I enjoy
that. And you got a lot of threads to keep up with.
Yeah, it's definitely, I wrote down it's space, Cloud Atlas is space Magnolia. Yeah, like it just...
Yes, it actually is.
I think of Nashville as being the kind of, you know, representation of this sort of movie.
Nashville is like on my list of, Ricky, why haven't we seen this movie yet?
Dude, okay.
What was the one we were talking about earlier? Death Becomes Her.
You...
I know, dude.
Are so obsessed with Paul Thomas Anderson and you haven't seen Nashville?
It's
are
like,
you fucking kidding
everything.
Me, Ricky Carmona?
Yeah, it's everything.
Dude.
I'm not proud.
Oh, my God.
I'm not proud of myself right now.
It is like he has spent most of his career trying to remake that movie in one way or another. You will not, you'll never look at Boogie Nights the same way again.
I know I'm going to watch it and love it. Like, it's one of those movies. Like, okay. I know, like, I'm going to see it and I'm gonna be like, yep, yeah, that was great. I don't know. Why? It's not streaming anywhere, and I should just fucking pay for it, but I'm lazy.
There's a great Criterion Blu-ray out.
Is that right?
There is.
Well, We'll have to make that happen.
It's worth it.
Okay.
It'll change your life.
All right. Magnolia was the only one I could think of. All my other ones are like obvious boring ones that I've already talked about on the show here.
Snyderhead.
Thank you.
Snyder die.
Snyder or die.
Movies, I don't love these, but I'm a fan of them. Unbreakable. I think Unbreakable's great. M. Night Shyamalan. And people
They're
always
making
like
a sequel.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
standing. I will stand for him, too. Shyamalan.
Yeah.
He's a weirdo.
People, The Happening?
That movie's horrible.
Outrun the Wind, everyone.
But I'll go Village.
I'm thinking of The Village. I hated The Village. Ooh.
I think it's okay. I'm like, people hated it, but I was like, I think this is all right. Like,
Love Actually? People give me shit for liking Love Actually? Come on now.
That's been a real bone of contention lately.
Yeah.
You know, Lindy West wrote this like epic takedown of it where she pointed out the fact that like four of the relationships in the movie are about men and their employees. You know, and it's like,
that's like valid.
I've reached the point where I'm like, I know what's wrong with this movie, but Christmas.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to read some of these Twitter responses because we have some people online, movies that they love, and I like the responses we got. The first one, at Beth Gilmer, I get a lot of shit for my undying love of Pootie Tang. Wadata sarate, Beth!
Sign your pity on a runny kind.
I loved Pootie Tang.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with it in college, so I understand.
At Own Braza says, I am ride or die for Steven Spielberg's AI. That's in the disappointment category for me, not in the hate category.
I hated it.
Did you?
I was like, I hate this so much that it made a bad date even worse. It made it the worst date I have ever had in my life.
Wow!
But did he like it and you fought over it?
He loved it. Oh, and boy. I was just like, very silent.
If it had ended with Haley Joel Osment underwater praying to the blue fairy forever and ever, I would have gone with it. The whole postscript with the aliens and the bringing back the dead mom, I was like,
let's not.
But Dave loves it. He'll defend it.
Is that right?
All of it.
Wasted William Hurt in that movie. That's what I remember. Wasted William Hurt. And at Mr. J. At Mr. Jewin? Mr. JWN. I'll read it like that. They say, I defend and really love the Matrix sequels. They're not perfect, but they're great.
Okay.
Well, all right.
All right. Okay. Yeah. You know, like, no judgment. Like,
no, not at all.
This is you. Do you.
You do you.
That's what we're learning right now, y'all. Just do you. Love a movie that you love. I don't know if you guys are, but I'm definitely past the age of trying to convince people.
Oh, no.
Like,
down that path lies madness.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, there are movies that I, you know, Clue is a movie that everybody seemingly loves now, but that's a movie that I love, but I know what's wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know what its flaws are, but I don't care because I get enough pleasure out of the other things that it's giving me.
Sure.
So, you know, I can delineate between like a movie that is just, that is entertaining versus a movie that is flawed, but still nonetheless, you know, like I'll still want to watch it over and over again.
I felt that way about Haunted Honeymoon. I will love that movie to fucking my casket, or you know, maybe like a little life pod. I don't know how I'm gonna die, what's gonna happen, but I will love that movie forever. But I also know
you're not kidding yourself.
Yeah. I know what's wrong, you know what's with going. It. I get it. Dom DeLuise like cross dressing is. Oh. Wow.
Don DeLuise.
I'm glad that Gene Wilder and Gilda Radner were happy off screen, but on screen, they never really quite...
It didn't really, like, come together
for
them, right?
Like, the woman in red is really unbearable, and Haunted Honeymoon is a tough sit.
It's one of my favorites.
Again, no judgment.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's you, girl. All right, it's almost time to go, but before we go, it is time for Staff Picks. Every week, we ask the panel to tell us about a movie that they recommend, and it can be streaming anywhere, in theaters, anywhere at all. Who wants to go first?
I was thinking that I would go first this time. And that's because I wanted to suggest the, what year is it? The 1972 Slaughterhouse-Five. That's directed by George Roy Hill, obviously based on the Kurt Vonnegut
And who
novel.
Is
he? Who is that? I mean, but the thing is that, like, we have to remember there might be people who, like, are listening who...
This might be our most heavy, hey, y'all need to go back further than 20 years and look shit up episode. George Roy Hill did that? Wow.
Yeah, yes. But
one of my
the
favorite
that,
unsung directors.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason I'm suggesting it is because a Twitter follower of mine asked me my favorite female film editors.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, yeah, let's go down D.D. Allen's career.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's one that she cut. And it's, again, the films that she cuts, they're like, you look at them and you're like, oh, the editing is spectacular in this. She's not just like working on good movies. These movies are good because she's doing the editing.
She edited Bonnie and Clyde.
So, and she changed editing. Yeah. She's fantastic, and I think people should maybe appreciate her more. So, yeah, D.D. Allen, take a look at Slaughterhouse-Five from 1972.
I have a story, and this may get cut for time, but y'all will enjoy it. Anyway.
Yes.
So when I first moved to Los Angeles, I would temp, and I worked for an agency that would send me to work usually at like entertainment clients. And I temped on the lot at Warner Brothers, and Dee Dee Allen was an exec there, and she was the only exec who didn't have to initiate projects. She was literally just there to fix movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like if a film gets to the end, it was like it's a disaster, Dee Dee would come in and like repair it and make it releasable. And so I knew she had an office on the lot, and I went to the New Beverly one night, and I saw a double feature of Slaughterhouse-Five and Man Who Fell to Earth. And I'd seen Slaughterhouse-Five before, but I was just blown away again by her editing and how great it was. So I sent her an inter-office memo that was a fan letter about how her editing of Slaughterhouse-Five, and I never heard back. And then years later, LA Film Critics gave her the Career Achievement Award,
yeah.
And I introduced myself to her, and I said, you won't remember this, but I sent you this memo, and she never saw it. But, you know.
Aww.
But I got to tell her face-to-face how awesome she was.
That's actually really cool.
Hell yeah. I love that.
Oh. She also cut The Breakfast Club.
Is that right?
Yeah, that was actually going to be my other one, was like maybe rewatch it and look at the editing.
Oh, hell,
you know, like,
yeah.
Watch it to pay attention specifically to how she's cutting between scenes and what she's doing. So do that too if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. The passage, the way time works in that movie is obviously essential. So.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
She's great.
I guess I knew who Dee Dee Allen was, but I didn't know that she had worked on all these movies. Like, yeah. I didn't know she did Breakfast Club. Oh, this
yeah,
is amazing.
Great stuff, yeah. Yeah. Dig down that hole.
Alonzo, what do you got for us?
Well, in keeping with our theme of movies we like that other people don't, coming back or coming to Netflix is Scream 3.
I love Scream 3.
Right? A lot of people think that this is where it went off the rails. You know, like if you have a Jay and Silent Bob cameo, suddenly like it's all over. I think Scream 3 is really great,
yeah.
And it's funny, and it's smart, and it is continuing the sort of meta themes of the whole series that, mm-hmm. that Craven was exploring. That incredible Carrie Fisher Parker Posey scene, which that alone is worth the proverbial price admission. And we've all forgotten the fact that the lead girl who's playing the movie within the movie version of Neve Campbell is Emily Mortimer. She zapped us all with that Men in Black thing to make us forget she was ever in Scream 3, but she was.
I actually love Scream 3. Yeah. I think it's really wonderful. So,
streaming on Netflix.
Streaming on Netflix.
Good suggestion.
Yeah, that's a solid one. Last night I started watching Blade Runner 2049 again. And like you've said many times, Alonzo, we're just not allowed to have nice things because that movie is so goddamn good and nobody went to go see it. And stuff. It was making me angry that why Denis Villeneuve didn't get nominated for Best Director. I mean, whatever. But I started thinking about Denis Villeneuve and I started thinking about the movie Prisoners, which I think it's his second movie, but it was his first. I feel like that was like his first big American, like, hey, we need to start paying attention to this guy. Am I wrong on that?
I think it was the first one in English, right? Because he'd done, like, Encendie or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Prisoners, I just happened to watch, like, on a Sunday in my apartment. And, man, it's a sad-ass movie. It's very dark, very rainy, very bleak. But I loved it. I thought it was great. You're not going to be happy at the end of this movie. You're just not. But it's still just a fantastic movie. So I think you should all watch Prisoners. It's got a great cast. Hugh Jackman, Terrence Howard.
It's 4 hours long.
It is 4 hours long.
No, it's not. It's not.
It loops back in on itself.
It's 1.5 Cloud Atlases.
And Paul Dano is great in it as well. So Prisoners, y'all. Check out Prisoners. I believe it might still be on Amazon Prime. If not, you can get it on Apple TV. All right. Shit. Boom. That's our show, y'all. That is Who Shot Ya. Thank you all for listening. April, thank you for being here.
Thanks,
Alonzo, thank you all for being here. Hey, everybody who writes to us on Twitter, thank you very much for all the kind words you're saying. If you want to leave us nice kind words, leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts on iTunes, please do that. You do that, we'll read it. We'll read it on the show. Shout out to Olson. They just cut right to the point. This podcast good.
Well, all right.
Okay.
Yep.
We thank you.
Right. Needle point that on a sampler.
Shout out to Catalyst for Wonder for saying, I love the banter between Alonzo, April, and Ricky. Thanks for introducing me to a plethora of new movies and some movies I haven't heard of as well as remind me of old favorites. Y'all make me smile.
Well, thank you, Catalyst.
That's nice.
Thank you.
That's
thank you
really
for using
nice.
One of my favorite
Do you
words.
Have a plethora of piñatas?
God damn it, Alonzo, you beat me to it. Oh, I love El Wapo. Hey, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet us at WhoShotYaPod, or you can send us an email at WhoShotYaMaximumFun.org. Next week, we'll be talking about Winchester, starring my favorite, our favorite, Dame Helen Mirren. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. I'm your host, Ricky Carmona. This has been a production of MaximumFun.org, and that's what's up.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.